Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Monday, May 11, 2015. And on today's podcast, we're going to look at and discuss the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the British ocean liner RMS Lusitania. Why is this relevant today? Why should we be talking about the sinking of an ocean liner 100 years ago? Because it led the U.S. into World War I. And that led us into World War II. And anyway, World War I was Woodrow Wilson's avenue to the Wilsonian world that we still live in today, a world discussed at length in my article and series of podcasts entitled How the Republic Became an Empire. If you want to understand the world of today, it is wise then to examine Woodrow Wilson's world, the world he created, and to examine the sinking of the Lusitania on the 100th anniversary of the event. On May 7, 1945, the Cunard liner RMS Lusitania was steaming eastward, bound for Liverpool, England, but in sight of the Irish coast, about 11 miles out from the coast. In calm seas and bright sunshine, nearly 2,000 people on board. At approximately 2:10 in the afternoon, a torpedo launched by the submarine U-20 of the Imperial German Navy slammed into the starboard side of the ship and exploded under the bridge. Secondary explosions ripped the ship apart, and it sank in 18 minutes. The heavy starboard list after the initial explosion made it impossible to launch most of the lifeboats, if there had been time to do so, which there wasn't. 1,198 people died, including 128 Americans. The world's reaction to the attack, which could have resulted only in the loss of civilian life, profoundly affected the outcome of World War I, which had begun just 10 months earlier. Now, let's look at some background to all this background. The days of wooden ships that fought side by side a few yards apart were over. They had not been over that long, but the Industrial Revolution put an end to them, and the era of steel-hulled battleships that could fire a shell 20 miles had begun. Submarines were also a product of the Industrial Revolution, and they became proficient at the beginning of the 1900s. Britain's navy was far stronger than Germany's, and it really did rule the waves. Therefore, Germany had to make war against Britain's merchant marine rather than against its battle fleet. Submarines were perfectly suited to do that. Merchant ships moved slowly and were easy prey for submarines. Unlike in the old days of wooden ships, submarines could not take possession of merchant ships and force them to port. Sinking was their only option. In any case, Britain's blockade of Germany made capturing the ships impossible. Britain and France could rely on the industrial might of the United States, even though the U.S. was officially neutral, while Germany had to rely on only its own production. To try to reduce this tremendous advantage, the Germans placed a war zone around Britain, announcing that vessels in those waters were subject to being sunk without warning. Passenger ships were supposed to be off limits, though. The German embassy in the United States placed ads in American newspapers warning Americans not to go there. Passenger ships were not thought to be in much danger from submarines, however. The sub could run about 10 knots on the surface and about 6 knots submerged, while a modern ocean liner could make 25 knots. To sink a passenger liner, a sub captain had to be very lucky, and the captain of U-20 was very lucky on May 7, 1945. Like most life and death decisions of war, it was a split-second decision of the sub's captain to launch his torpedo, a fateful decision. Admiral Alfred von Tirpitz, commander of the German fleet, called the U-boat, quote, the miracle weapon that could turn the tide of war, end quote. Well, truer words were never spoken. The U.S. had declared neutrality, and it resisted calls to enter the war, but worldwide public outcry was so intense that Germany declared it would not attack neutral ships, regardless of where they were, and would not attack passenger ships at all. Early in 1917, the British blockade of Germany was strangling Germany. Near starvation in the German homeland, the Germans decided they had to gamble. They were going to lose the war to starvation anyway, so why not take a risk? They decided to survive by reinstituting unrestricted submarine warfare. They knew that act would probably bring America into the war, but their gamble was that they could starve Britain into submission before the Americans could bring their overwhelming power to bear. Well, Germany lost that gamble. They lost. It was a stupid war. A war fought for stupid reasons. A war where thousands died for just a few yards of mud. Trench warfare went on for many years until the tank came on the scene in mid-1917. The French nation, hurling itself against the German trenches, lost more men in combat than the Americans have lost in any war in the entire history of our country. Before and during America's entry into the war, the United States provided vast sums of arms and credit to the Allies. The Allies spent the roaring 20s trying to convince the U.S. to forgive the debt they had readily made, debt that they promised to repay in gold coin, but they could not repay it. And you know what they say about debts that can't be paid, folks? They will not be paid. Finally, they simply refused to pay and defaulted. World War II came along and saved them. The whole thing started over, except with better weapons. World War I fell into disfavor among progressives in the 20s and 30s, which helped force Franklin Roosevelt to make his, quote, "I hate war" speech in 1936. Today, that speech is part of his memorial in Washington, D.C. The Second World War reversed most people's assumptions that the First War was unnecessary. The Germans, you see, were bad, and so they had been bad in the First War, too, really bad. The First War was the platform on which the New World Order was built, the order that we live in today. Finally, folks, think about it. World War I was 100 years ago. We are today about as far away from it as those people then were from the American Revolution. Fit the pieces of the puzzle together, and you'll see a picture of where you are, where you live today, and how you got there. At least that's the way I see it, folks. Until next time, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.